The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We're winding down here toward a conclusion of one of the gaps that we started talking about a number of programs ago, namely that gap between nothing and something. And we have discussed at great length some of the possibilities, some of the theories, etc. And in the last several programs, we've been talking about the Big Bang Theory. And the reason for spending this amount of time, it is undoubtedly the primary, by primary I mean the theory that is accepted by more individuals than any other single theory is. And we've been looking at some observations by astronomers, evolutionary astronomers for the most part, dealing with how trustworthy that idea is. And as I have reminded you repeatedly, you certainly can't claim that it has a scientific basis for reasons that we have looked at over and over and over again. Now, we were looking at some comments by Robert L. Oldershaw last time from an article that was published in The New Scientist back in 1990. It was entitled, "What is Wrong with the New Physics?" And there are a couple of other things that are worth a section of that article, certainly, that are worth our noting. We were looking at one in which he was making comments about the fact that there were two areas that provided difficulty for the theory, particle physics and cosmology, and I won't go back and repeat that. But a little bit later in the same article, on page 59, this quote, comment, quote, "First, the Big Bang is treated as an unexplainable event without a cause." Again, let me interrupt here. As soon as that statement is made, you have to understand that it can't be science. Science, of necessity, deals with causes and effects. And it is interesting to me to see that the astronomers admit that this is not the case here. But as soon as that is admitted, then it also is apparent that we're not talking about science. First, the Big Bang is treated as an unexplainable event without a cause. Secondly, the Big Bang could not explain convincingly how matter got organized into lumps, galaxies, and clusters of galaxies. Again, let me interrupt. If there was a Big Bang, then you would expect a very regular, smooth movement of the material that had been included in the pinhead site of the explosion to spread outward from it evenly. And yet, that is not the case. We see stars and planets and galaxies that are clumps of. These are what the lumpy universe is that is referred to here. And it simply is contrary to what you would expect if you were taking the Big Bang at face value. Thirdly, it did not predict that for the universe to be held together in the way that it is, more than 90% of the universe would have to be in the form of some strange, unknown, dark form of matter. Not only is the arrangement of the matter not consistent with the Big Bang, but the amount of it in places where it is simply leaves questions that there really are no good answers to. Dr. Oldershaw winds all this up with this comment. "Theorists also invented the concepts of inflation and cold dark matter to augment the Big Bang paradigm and to keep it viable. But they too have come into increasing conflict with observations. In light of all these problems, it is astounding that the Big Bang hypothesis is the only cosmological model that physicists have taken seriously," end quote. And I would certainly add my approval to that comment. In light of all of the theories, all of the ideas that have existed over, well, since the beginning of 1900s, for example, there are at least six or eight major ideas about that. And yet, in the last 20 or 30 years, most of the astronomers have come to the point that they accept only this one. And yet, as the, if not scientific provision of information, simply the theoretical examination of it continue, there are increasing difficulties with it. But they haven't changed their mind at all about it. Now, there was a man by the name of Anthony Perrott, wrote an article in the Sciences called Not With a Bang. This one was published in 1990. And a couple of comments that are worth noting, particularly if you have an inclination toward philosophy. Quote, cosmology has become much more sophisticated since the 16th century, but the medieval dodge still applies. By adding enough epicycles or their modern ad hoc counterparts, it is always possible to force reality to take the shape of the model, end quote. Now, that last phrase, I think, is very pertinent here. It is always possible to force reality to take the shape of the model. You have the model set up, and then you're going to rest and twist and ignore and add and do whatever is necessary to make the information that is the basis for that fit what you think it ought to be. This, again, is not what science is all about. A little bit later in the article, he made this comment, quote, by the end of the 1960s, the Big Bang had become almost universally accepted, and it has now penetrated the popular consciousness so deeply that at time one forgets it is still just a theory. And that comment is quite accurate. If I don't think I'm drawing an improper comparison here, but the Big Bang has the same position with regard to astronomy that evolution has with regard to biology. The difficulties with it are simply ignored, and the idea has come to the point almost of being sacred. I often wonder, what is it that could be brought up that would cause some of these folks to give up their idea in the theory? And I'm convinced the answer to that question, nothing. And again, for those of you that may have listened since the program began to be broadcast, we talked about that at one time. Is this idea, are these theories promulgated because of the persuasive evidence? Are they because simply of an inherent desire to present a scientific view of something? And there certainly are enough difficulties with them to indicate that is not the case. And if it is not, then why persist? Why maintain this? And I have commented often that the answer to that question is simply that you have men who have looked around at the creation and in most cases have rejected the idea of creation, rejected the idea of a creator. And these theories are invented and perpetuated in an effort to remove the necessity of submission of the individual to a creator. Now, I'm not sure how many of these men have really gone through that in their thinking, but the fact is that is the primary reason for the perpetuation of theories which really don't make any sense, scientifically or otherwise, but they're held on to and continue to be worked at so that the individual will not be brought to a position that he will have to admit that he is a creature in a creation that was brought into existence by a creator and that he himself is therefore necessarily in the position of needing to submit himself to the will and the truth of that creator. And I don't think I have any delusions about whether all of this is going to change or not. Don't think it will. I think when we come to the end of this age and beyond, there will still be individuals who will hang on to these ideas simply to avoid the necessity of the submission that I have just mentioned to you. Now, finally, there is a comment that was made by a man by the name of Waldrop, M. Mitchell Waldrop. And he wrote an article in Science back in 1987 and has discussed here something of the history of all of the variations that have occurred. I really don't think it is worth our time to go back through all of the ups and downs and the additions and the variations that have been made to the theory. but I do want to give you a conclusion that he came to in the article. Quote, in other words, says Guth, new universes may be constantly coming into existence all around us, spontaneously and invisibly. Now let that soak in. Bear in mind, this is supposed to be in the context of science. Science requires perception. It requires the ability to use the senses to gain information. And here, this man Guth made the statement that new universes may be constantly coming into existence all around us, spontaneously and invisibly. Spontaneous would simply mean that they're coming into existence out of nothing, that there's nothing there to form the basis for them, that they just pop into existence, and it is not possible to observe them. Now, if you're going to allow that kind of thing to become part of science, you can end up with a view that involves anything you want to talk about. And it is simply contrary to what real science is. Finally, a man by the name of Victor F. Weisskopf, in an article entitled The Origin of the Universe and the American Scientist, which was published back in 1983. This gentleman was a professor emeritus and former head of the physics department at MIT, and his credentials certainly are not questionable at all. Quote, it should be emphasized that all discussions of the development of the cosmos are rather hypothetical, because it is very hard work to make empirical observations regarding the totality of the universe. I don't know whether he's tongue-in-cheek here. I suspect he is. It's not hard, not difficult. It simply isn't possible to do that. And this man is pointing that out, I would assume, to his colleagues. Because it is difficult to make empirical observation about regarding the totality of science, he goes on to say, and therefore, we do not know whether we have caught the real facts. No existing view of the development of the cosmos is completely satisfactory. This includes the standard model, which leads to certain fundamental questions and problems. Now, I'm skipping some material here, but later on he says this, quote, indeed, the Judeo-Christian tradition describes the beginning of the world in a way that is surprisingly similar to the scientific model. And then he goes on with a comment about that. That is a very surprising statement to find from a modern physicist or astronomer. Now, we have perhaps taken longer than is best to go through all of this discussion, but my primary purpose is to explore in some detail what is the primary view of cosmologists today, how things got here, and to show you, if nothing else, that it simply is not a scientific view, and that it is not possible for us to have scientific information about the origins, in this case, the origin of matter, the origin of the universe in which we find ourselves.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.